This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLGLBTIQ Community Radio
Station. BTIQ Community Radio Station.
Joy 94.9.
Hello Kitty is a girl, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Strung out on the highway, the car inverted. What are you but a drum and a tube and a wire? Black heart, a fire in the dark. A fire in the dark. I have no statement for your benefit, young man, except this. All will live again in the eyes of an actor, and the light on the glass. So let me see that ass.
I identify as queer, and so, but the answer to the how it influences my work kind of changes. You know, it changes at all times.
Warning, warning! This is an official warning. The health service recommends you turn off your radio now. This program is not good for you. It will fry your brain. It will cause lasting insanity.
Oh God!
Little orifices. You have been warned. I'm gonna count backwards from 10. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Like, that sounds like razor blades in my eyes.
We warned you.
Ugh.
Oh, God.
My eyes!
Oh,
my ears! We warned you. We warned you. Oh, God, it's too late.
Meow.
Meow. Oh, God, someone poke my eardrums out now. I can't handle it any longer.
Sapphic suckers and evil witches, queer women in horror films, same-sex ladies, girls-on-girls action. Why is it that lesbians and bi women always have to die horrible deaths in horror films? Find out that and a movie called Lyle, only at your Melbourne Queer Film Festival with the Squeamer from Sci-Fi and Scream and Queer Geeks of Oz and Geek Girl Speak. She'll be there, and same-sex wonders will happen when Sapphic Suckers and Evil Witches, Queer Woman in Horror Films, comes to you at the Kino, March 25th, that's a Wednesday, from 6 p.m. Be there for some action, girl-on-girl action. Gay ladies, are they just there to whet the appetite of a hetero male voyeur? And what do we think about sapphic sisters on the silver screen? Is it important that women make them? Movies and much more love and fun with cult thrillers and gore films that we adore. Sapphic Suckers and Evil Witches, Wednesday, March 25th, 6 p.m. Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
So many Canadians are everywhere now. It's like, it's a bit like New Zealanders. We're also, and Australians are pretty similar, I think. We get around.
Yeah.
But of course, we're big Lynch fans and followers. And of course, with a lot of the music that you've done as well, I don't normally interview music people, but this is wonderful. And when I saw your name pop up, because we are a LGBTIQ station, I just thought, look, I'll take the chance and see if I can snag you. So thank you.
My pleasure.
This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. And we have on the line, we've got Owen Pallet. He's in Vancouver, Canada right now, and he's going to speak to us today, which is fantastic. He's going to be over in Sydney at the Sydney Opera House in March, coming up for something called In Dreams. It's the Aussie premiere exclusive to Sydney of performances from the London acclaimed performances, and it's basically the legendary filmmaker David Lynch, of course, and his soundtracks and those interpretations. So I want to welcome you here, Owen.
Hi Sonia, how are you?
Owen, of course, Canadian composer, violinist, keyboardist, vocalist, pretty much what don't you play as an instrument. You've been involved in so many fabulous things musically, and well, yes, just to intro you to our audience here at Joy 94.9, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your passion for music?
Sure. Well, I do a lot of different kind of work in film scoring and new music composition and album making and arrangement work. And right now I'm just in the phase where I put out an album last year called In Conflict, and I'm doing some touring to support it. And then this year there was just a whole lot of, I had a kind of a nice big free schedule, and so I was able to kind of entertain all sorts of different options for different, all different sorts of gigs. And one of those gigs was that David Coulter, who organized the In Dreams Festival, asked me to fly down to Australia to sing some David Lynch songs. And I'm his Julie Cruise, actually, which is kind of,
wow,
hilarious. I feel like more of a Jimmy Scott than a Julie Cruise, but yeah, they've got me doing the Julie Cruise. So yeah, that's how I'm playing into it. But these sort of festivals are always really interesting. I've participated in tribute festivals before, and it's always, there's always something kind of like a little futile about it, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying to pay tribute to somebody who is known for being so iconoclastic and who pays tribute to no one, you know what I mean? And so it does kind of feel like a bit of an Ouroboros, like snake eating itself sort of thing. But, you know, at the same time, the music is so good, the product is so good,
yeah,
that, you know, you kind of can't resist being asked to participate.
Well, I'm glad you said that. Sounds like you obviously, yeah, you want to be part of it, and who wouldn't? I mean, there's a great lineup of people, Mick Harvey from The Bad Seeds, Sophia Bros, of course, and yourself. Have you worked with any of these guys before?
Maybe Mick Harvey, I think. He's the guy from Dirty Three, right, as well? Yeah, no, I played shows with Mick Harvey before, but I don't think I've ever been on stage with him at the same time. But David Coulter is the organizer. Yeah, he's the guy that I know the most. Cool. So, but yeah, it should be fun, and it's a nice excuse to come down to Australia and play some of my own shows as well. So yeah, it's going to be really great.
All right, so that's good. Now, it is quite a surreal type of, I guess, as you're saying, the landscape, the soundtracks, and the way you're going to interpret them. Can you give us an idea of what you plan to do, what people may expect?
I don't know, because we haven't even started really putting the show together yet.
Okay.
I just kind of actually only got... I only found out what songs I was going to be covering just a couple of days ago. So I'm just kind of in the process of learning them. But, you know, I mean, it's very inspiring to see any sort of filmmaker who takes such a vested interest in the musical part of the filmmaking process, whether it's, you know, John Carpenter or Lynch himself or...
Yeah.
So it's been such a treat to kind of like unpack all the musical stuff that you've just been hearing and being like, oh wow, Lynch actually wrote this song. Like, I had no idea. Like, he wrote these lyrics and Angelo Badalamenti, you know. So it's been pretty cool to unpack it all.
No, it is amazing. Angelo Badalamenti and Lynch, of course, doing his own. I think some of my favorites would be Lost Highway, the work there, and Wild at Heart for myself, for the Lynch music as such.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big, my favorite film of the guy is Eraserhead, but that's kind of more my, that's more my aesthetic. But yeah, I remember a lot, Lost Highway introduced me to a whole lot of, I mean, it was, I think, in collaboration with Trent Reznor, and so Trent was kind of bringing a lot of his crew into that musical landscape and stuff that he was interested in. But yeah, there's a lot of amazing music.
No, true. That's fantastic. Now, of course, the LGBTIQ question. You're all right with that, being a queer person?
Yeah,
and how you identify? So how do you identify, and how much does that actually influence your own work as a composer and musician?
Well, I mean, I identify as queer, and so, but the answer to the how it influenced my work kind of changes. You know, it changes at all times. When I first started making my work, I was very reactionarily. I felt like I was being a little bit reactionary to a lot of my contemporaries who were creating overtly sexual work with overtly sexual themes. Mm-hmm. I believe that you could make music that was transgressive just naturally without having to, involve, you know, your gender or your sexuality as being a part of that. That just the act of coming out, you know, was having to prioritize the needs of your body over the sort of the rigors of society or whatever. And I think it just generally prepared an artist for naturally creating subversive or transgressive work. And I kind of felt that was the case, but over time I kind of feel that that's a little myopic, and it also, furthermore, kind of suggests that, you know, that people who are not queer are somehow in some position of not being able to make that same work.
Right.
At least that's what some people accuse me of. So I've been constantly revising, you know, my opinion about how my sexuality influences my work, and always, like, trying to change the way that I'm doing it to make my music as productive as possible, not just for queer people, but for you know, any people in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I do hope that my music, I think my music naturally and historically has spoken not just towards queer people, but any sort of marginalized group. And the question is, you know, how you can kind of make it universal, or even whether or not it's a good thing, whether or not you would want it to be so, you know?
Mm. No, it's a good point. I think perhaps it's just my opinion, perhaps it's just the times we live in the last few years. It's been sort of like something that people have latched onto in a way, you know, out externally to say, well, are you gay or not, and coming out, how much difference does it make, etc., to what you do. And because so few people done it, although more and more, you become one of those people that, you know, people will turn to you in the community and go, well, he's done it and he's doing okay. So as far as being able to get work and be comfortable with that work, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think it just changes. Like, I happen to become an adult in a really amazing and inclusive social environment where gender issues and sexuality issues and race issues were kind of just much more clouded, and you had all sorts of people just making art and appreciating each other's art, and there was the capability of within all these different groups to empathize with each other. So you would have any sort of person participating in any sort of scene, and it would not be seen as weird or wrong or one way or another. As a result, it's like really, it's like when I bring my band, for example, like just my bassist and my drummer, who are my two closest friends who I've had since, you know, since I was basically just out of my teens. Mm. Whenever I introduce them into other social environments, people are just so surprised to find out that they're straight men. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the scene in Toronto was so, had just such an incredible amount of intersection that, that, you know, I felt really blessed. And as my music has kind of grown and its reach has increased to the point that I'm doing interviews in Russia and like doing tours of Asia. Mm. It has been at first a little disheartening, but now I just kind of have a sort of a stoic sort of appreciation for the fact that, you know, the world is not filled with empathetic people necessarily. More to the point too, I just feel as if like the plight of like a queer white guy is kind of like a little less important, you know what I'm saying? And I'm much more interested in kind of like, you know, trying to less create music that or less create work that is going to reach everybody, and more create work to the people who actually need that work. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. So, yeah.
It's been a bit of a lesson learned, and I feel now it's like my work is just, it can never really be queer enough. It can never really, I want to kind of push it as far out as I can, you know?
Yeah, it's like I was asked once upon a time if I could do stories and stuff that were happy gay, not serious gay stories. I was like, okay, what do you mean? But it's just interesting that you can around that. So,
but I think also that... The definitions of queerness, too, are expanding as well. I mean, one of my favorite queer movies that I've seen in the last, 10 years or whatever is the film I Am Love by Luca Guadagnino. It's a Tilda Swinton Italian-language movie.
Oh, it's beautiful, that film.
And there's nothing queer about it, actually, in the traditional sense, but it, aside from Luca being, you know, a gay director.
Yes.
But the film puts side by side, really, this sort of, you know, intergenerational love, not even really intergenerational, but it's kind of an intergenerational, interclass love between, you know, Tilda Swinton and, you know, her son's best friend, who's a cook, and shows how the needs of their bodies are going to bring down, absolutely, everything else. It's going to bring down this entire Italian institution. And there is a kind of a parallel drawn, too, between a lesbian romance in that film, but it comes back to, you know, the same stuff that Yuki Mishima was writing about when he would write a book where that was about, you know, just the love between, you know, a left-wing politician and a right-wing restaurateur and after the banquet, and how, you know, this love is going to transcend, and even when it brings down all of the ridiculous other structures that people cling to, you know, it's, in a way, there you can see queer work beyond the sort of, structure of what is traditionally identified as queer sexuality.
Yeah, very good points. You've said it. That's great. Excellent. But obviously, we've probably got, I don't know how much time left, but I'll try and be quick and get to a question about something a bit different as such, and that is Final Fantasy and, of course, games. I believe you like games, and in particular that one. Group of games?
Well, it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing to talk about because I don't want to upset anybody. You know, but,
that's all right.
Basically, by the time that I named my band Final Fantasy in 2005, I'd long outgrown actually playing games.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, 2004, and I named it specifically just because the experience that I had in practicing these songs, which were very technically complicated. And would take me all day working in my basement on a beautiful summer day while the rest of my friends were out getting day drunk. I would be in the basement, practicing looping and learning these songs and putting them together. And it reminded me of, you know, periods when I was a teenager when there was nothing for me to do except stay in the basement and play Final Fantasy for hours on end. This added to the... So it was kind of a structural reminiscence, you know. This added to the fact was that, you know, my roommates were also playing Grand Theft Auto in that same space some night. So, you know, it did have this kind of a video game sort of quality to it. Added to this was just the fact that up until I started writing songs with Final Fantasy, I kind of had a much more reserved quality to my hands, like a sort of a detached quality to my songwriting. I wanted to not write songs that were so overtly emotional. And my songs were approaching emotion from a much more sort of critical place, whereas with the early Final Fantasy songs, they were essentially love songs, and they kind of felt ridiculous for me to write, and they reminded me of the way that emotions are expressed in those classic JRPGs as being, you know, love crossing heavens and earth and all this kind of stuff. So it wasn't so much of a kind of wow, I really love JRPGs, guys, here's my band name, as it was a little more complicated than that, and fitting into a larger context of a whole bunch of other stuff that I was doing.
And of course, the question about being nominated for an Oscar, that's just incredible for the soundtrack with her, that film. So what was that like to work alongside some amazing people there, like Arkay Fire and so on?
Yeah, well, it's a difficult thing to really talk about without sounding unappreciative, you know, because to be honest, it's like the things that make me happy about working are, you know, the actual process of creating work and the social aspect of it, working with other people and, the feeling of, you know, accomplishing something, accomplishing their goals or accomplishing your own goals. And, you know, at the end of a week or at the end of a month, being able to look at something and say, we've created something very beautiful. the act of kind of being recognized, you know, through the mechanisms of award shows kind of runs counterintuitively to that, you know. I've never really regarded the Oscars as being any sort of reasonable barometer for the quality of any work. And so to be nominated and to be, you know, celebrated within that system kind of did not, it didn't move me particularly. At the same time, I can't deny that it's had, you know, a positive effect on my career. And so, you know, I'm appreciative for it on that level. But, you know, it is frustrating, you know. I mean, that when all of your favorite movies and all of your favorite work, it just completely functions outside of the context of those kind of award shows.
Yeah, it must be quite surreal.
run by money and white men. Run by money and rich old white men, to paraphrase Julie Delpy, you know, so I mean, the experience was fine. It was fine. I like making work.
And Spike Jonze.
I don't like receiving awards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What are you wearing on the red carpet? Yeah, that sort of thing. Ask her something else. What are the hashtags?
Oh, no, I love the fashion. I just don't like the awards. But working with Spike was a trip. Working with Spike was really amazing. He's such a earnest and incredible man, and you know, I love the work that he did, and he had such a hands-on approach with the score that I was actually compiling a bunch of the cues for a demo reel just a couple days ago, and it really struck me just how the music kind of is nonsensical without the film. Like, I was like listening to these cues, and I was like, this music is kind of like boring on its own. Like, it's like really, it's so synergistic with the imagery of the film that, like, on its own, you're just kind of like, oh, really? This is quality. But I mean, part of that was just like how intense the process was, working, really refining these cues, making them really work in the context of that film. So yeah,
well, they are beautiful
experience, and
yeah, standalone.
I love working with Spike.
Excellent. What's happening for the future for you? Like, you're going to be doing some music here, not just in Dreams, March the 14th at the Sydney Opera House, but you're going to be doing a few gigs around the place when you get here, or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a couple of gigs booked in Melbourne that I'm still waiting to announce, but they're going to be, I mean, they're pretty last minute. We're still actually looking to confirm a gig in Sydney.
Okay.
I think we've kind of maybe are just nailing that down today.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, just a few small gigs. I've been down to Australia a few times and played a bunch of shows, and they've all gone really, really well. I have a band now that I love to tour with, but this trip is just going to be me solo, and hopefully I'll be able to come back sometime in the winter for with the band proper, so you can actually see what really we're all about. Oh. All those solo shows have been really, really striking these days too. So yeah, I'm kind of up to that this year, working on some new songs, and I'm writing some new music. I'm doing this big classical commission for Barbara Hannigan, who's this new music soprano. She's kind of a big deal in that world. And so I'm setting some text from the Heaven's Gate Suicide Cult website.
As you do.
Oratorio for her.
As you do.
So yeah, just a little of this, a little of that, you know.
Oh, Suicide Cults and, yes, well, David Lynch. Could be something there. No, well, it's going to be great to hear how it goes, the performance that's happening here at the Sydney Opera House. So I really look forward to seeing what people think. So far, it's had some great feedback from what's happened overseas. So good on you. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, thanks. I haven't actually participated in any one so far. But,
you went in the London one? Okay.
David is such an amazing organizer. He's such an amazing organizer that I'm sure it's going to be really fabulous, and I can't wait.
And what would be your favorite Lynch film if you had to choose? I think you said Eraserhead, but would that be the one that stands?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Eraserhead is kind of a bit of a cop-out. Let me think. Let me go through. What are the other ones we've got? I mean, I kind of have a soft spot for Mulholland Drive. I know that people are kind of like hit and miss, like up and down with that one, because it does have this kind of a TV series quality to it.
I would have loved to have seen it as a TV series.
Well, I think it's just a fabulous movie already.
And what do you think of the remakes?
Yeah, I would definitely...
I mean, Twin Peaks being made, as a TV show, again, following on like a sequel TV show.
Oh, they're remaking Twin Peaks?
Well, not apparently they're just doing like a sequel TV series, yeah. And he's going to be involved, so that's going to be interesting. David Lynch will be involved in it.
I'm not so excited about that idea, to be honest with you, but... I already feel as if Twin Peaks has been remade as a TV series. I mean, I feel as if Jane Campion kind of like made a really fabulous feminist version of it with Top of the Lake, and I feel as if, like, what's the guy's name? You know, Perfect Blue Dude? Satoshi Kon?
Oh, yeah.
He kind of did it with Paranoia Agent. You know, I think that was even a better series than Twin Peaks, and kind of on the same tip. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think people should necessarily return to ground that's already been tread on. But that's just me.
We'll see what he does. It'll be interesting whatever he does, I think. However it goes, I'm sure. Mm. There'll be a twist or two, no doubt. All right, look, Owen, I obviously, we've talked a lot and certainly don't want to keep you from your actual holiday. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish?
No, not so much. I'm just really excited to come back to Australia and eat all your delicious food. Best food in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, and look, there's some, and Melbourne's really proud of its, when you get a chance, when you do get to Melbourne, is pretty proud of its culinary, you know, culinariness.
Yeah, well, not just Melbourne. Everywhere I went in Australia was just like out of this world good. I'm really, really excited to come back.
Cool, that's excellent. Now, just before I do hang up on you, I wonder if you could do a station ID, if that's okay. I won't keep you too long, but obviously your name, and you're listening to Joy 94.9, if that's all right.
This is Owen Pallett, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Excellent. And I just love it. I've been watching your videos on YouTube. Guilty. And really,
cool.
Really enjoying them. And sorry about the beginning of the interview. Are you from Canada? Oh, that was terrible. I will cut that out. Sorry.
That's fine. I don't mind. It's okay.
Well, it's a bit like Kiwis and Aussies. You know, never tell a Kiwi that they're Australian. They get upset.
That's yeah, funny. I've noticed that. Oh, man.
Is that rivalry?
Yeah, I really stuck my foot in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was having dinner with Lord at one point, and it was just like some Arcade Fire thing. It's not like Lord gives a shit about my music or whatever. Maybe she does, I don't know. But we were having dinner, and I asked them a question about, you know, where would I, when I'm in Melbourne, where would I, you know, question. And the response was just like complete stone-faced, we're not from Australia. And I was just like, I know you're not from Australia, but you've probably been to Melbourne more than I have.
It's all about the rugby.
I guess so. I mean, if somebody asked me, when I go to New York, what would I do? My response would not be like, I'm from Canada. That's fine. It was my own fault. I should have prefaced it by saying, like, I know you guys are Kiwis, but I'm going to Melbourne in a week. Where should I get my tacos or whatever? Anyways.
Yeah, there's lots of burrito places here, actually, if you like that sort of thing. No worries. Well, that's excellent. Yay. Okay, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for speaking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream, Owen Pallett.
It's my pleasure. Great talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck with the show, the performances at the Sydney Opera House and all the other gigs when you get around to booking them for Melbourne and Sydney and wherever else you go. So that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I'm just leaning on my booking agent to get all that information as quick as possible. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks for talking to us. I'll let you go. And good luck. Is that cool?
Okay, cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Have a lovely day and have a great trip.
Great talking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Overball, and you listen to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to the Mile High Club, passengers. Room 801. Taking off soon. Passengers, be aware. Entrances can be found at the front and at the rear of the craft. We will reach our destination March 28th, where you will find a moistening spread of cosplay, art, fiction, yaoi, yuri,
yeah.
Games, fandom, and the best of internet culture. Hentai, sorry, and I wish you a pleasant journey with a very happy ending. Our in-flight meal is lasagna, served with a cheesy bechamel sauce, with tentacles. My name is Henrietta Hentai, and I will be your purser. A purser, full of tricks, naughtiness, and titillation. Those of you sporting erections, please attach your seatbelt and lower trousers to the floor. Ladies, the correct place for your dress is up over your shoulders. Our staff will be coming to your seats to provide intense hands-on stewardessence for that personal touch.
Saturday, 28th of March to Sunday, 29th of March, 2015, to the Mile High Club, room 801.
Find more Joycasts. What? You can find more Joycasts. Go to joy.org.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.